Okay.
So we sent a... the second lieutenant comes down, and the Navy captain just reams him out. And finally he turns away from the Navy captain. He says, "Men, hit the deck means attention. Attention!" So, you know, they kind of unravel. A bunch of GIs, you know, not German, they kind of unravel and get into a vertical. Everybody get out of it. Everybody was standing at attention. As much as attention as a bunch of GIs will stand. Not Marines, these are GIs. And Lieutenant and the Navy captain stormed out with his troop behind him. Well, we knew we had a problem. So we put, four master sergeants in the delegation, and they got permission to go see the colonel. And they told the colonel morale aboard ship was very bad. And they were kind of worried, because we sent the top guys because they outranked everybody. They were kind of worried because in case another waiver was going to be on, was going to have to be signed on this discharge, and these guys wouldn't sign any more waivers on that discharge. They were just unhappy. So the colonel says, "I'll take care of it, get you off that ship." So the orders came through right after these guys came back. "We're going off the ship." And so we stuff everything that we put into these bags. Everything had to go into those bags because we're in the middle of San Francisco Bay, which is rough. That wind comes sailing through the Golden Gate. And the boat, the launch, and I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 foot wave, something like that. But let me tell you, that's a long way down with this bag on your back, and you're going down the side on this thing. So we had to get everything into the bag, otherwise you couldn't. It was crammed in there, and it came out pretty wrinkled, but everything was crammed into those bags. And we get into this boat, bouncing up and down, and they take us to the Oakland Army Base. Oakland Army Base, and they put us into MP barracks. MPs, spit and polish. White puttees, white gloves, spit and polish. Off come these GIs. Well, we were in fatigues, so we didn't have ties on in those days. And we have a patch that showed a bolt of lightning splitting an atom. Well, nobody knew what the hell it was. Okay, and right beside the MP barracks was an Army overseas post office, which they had converted to transient troop barracks. And all these troops, thousands of troops, were coming back from the Pacific. They would be processed through there to whatever camps they were going in order to get discharged. Mm-hmm. They couldn't be discharged from there. And they all had different patches. These MPs didn't know those patches meant. But these guys were on the way out of the Army, and they figured, if we're on the way out of the Army, no ties, no hats, sleeves rolled up, you know, they're wearing Class A uniform, but they didn't worry. I mean, they were on their way out. They had done their job. So it didn't take us long to figure that out. So off came our hats, off came the tie. Off came the... And we didn't have anything to do. We'd sleep, or we'd play baseball, or softball, or something. We didn't have anything to do. Go to the PX, and go do something. I mean, there's nothing to do. There was a post library, so we'd go there and read books, do something. And one day, we were there about 2 weeks. One guy said, "I'm going to see if I can't get a pass." He was one of the first sergeants, so the master sergeant. So he got permission to... He called the Major Geiger, who was evidently an executive officer for Colonel Stafford Warren, who was the first dean of the medical school at UCLA. There was no medical school there until after the war. Stafford Warren became the first dean of the medical school. But he was a colonel, and he outranked our captain, so he could tell him what to do. And Dagger says, yeah, I'll give you a Class A pass. And so while he was making out the pass, yes, you know, just like a pad of paper and a pad, while he was making those out, some non-com came in and said he was needed in the colonel's office. So he said, he'll be right back. So when he goes in, this guy, you know, he's not stupid. He sees where there's a bunch of these passbooks, you see, into his pocket, go to the passbooks. A guy that comes back and signs his pass, that's all we needed. I mean, we had the guy's signature. All we needed was one, because we could trace the signature. And we didn't have anything to do. So, you know, pretty soon, we'd get out to Yosemite, go into San Francisco, and then pretty soon guys would get out to Hollywood, and then pretty soon they were going to Mexico, and then pretty soon they were going up to Canada. It was unreal. But these guys never got in any trouble. Mm. And they always had passes. One day there's a notice on the bulletin board that says on a Saturday, this was the beginning of the week, on a Saturday that we were going to be taken over to the radiation lab at the University of California. So anybody that had any friends got the word out. And every one of those 38 guys was back. And they, of course, took attendance, and they loaded us on a bus and took us over to the radiation lab and into a chemistry lecture hall, you know, with 300 students. So it was up like a... And there was a laboratory bench in the front, and across the laboratory bench were there a bunch of Geiger counters. Door was open, breeze was blowing through, as it is in that part of the country. And there were 38 officers there, and 38 enlisted men. Us and 38 officers. All medical officers. And so the officers talk about the officers, and then they talk about, you know, we didn't have, there was none, there was no crossing yet. No rule that said you couldn't, but we didn't know that, and they didn't know us. And the major came in and said, okay, take your seat. So everybody took seats. We were sitting there. And there's a breeze blowing through this place over there. And he said, well, I'm now going to tell you what you're going to be doing. And so he explains that they're going to be setting off this nuclear device. It's not a weapon. It's a device. Okay? Which means they put it on a tower. In those days, it was above ground. And they had all these Navy ships out there, and they wanted to see what was going to happen to these Navy ships. I can remember pictures which showed a destroyer just standing right on end like this. And they had 38 PT boats. And I looked at the guy next to me, the guy looked at me like this, you know. You know, where's the surprise over here, you see? And this breeze is blowing through, and the extra breeze came through, and the door started to shut. It picked up speed, picked up speed, picked up speed, picked up speed, and bang! And every damn one of those Geiger counters went off. And he explained that after the explosion, they were going to send these PT boats in, that each of the enlisted men would have a Geiger counter with them, and it would be interpreted by the medical officer. And these guys are listening, and they're stupid, they don't believe. Well, we're not stupid, you know. We don't say a word, you see. And after it was over, the Colonel Warren came in, and he said, okay, men, he said, now you know what you're going to be doing. He says, there's a chance, outside chance, although very, very slim, that we may run into the monsoon season. If that's the case, we're going to need another wave on your discharge. And so one guy got more guts than the rest of us. He raised his hand. Colonel, sir? Yes, sir. Sir, what if one did not sign the wave? The colonel got furious. He said, under those circumstances, I have no choice but to send them back to get discharged. But let me tell you, there were 38 guys there. Nobody would sign a waiver.
part of this town. I mean, that's all it took. So pretty soon they got to load these guys into a train, send them back to Oak Ridge, Tennessee. The commander of our detachment, MTN, these 18 means 1,200 men. He had these 1,200 men. He looked bad. He had sent 38 guys out there. Okay? And now they're all coming back. By the way, when we were out on the West Coast, we never got a paycheck. So if we weren't eating on the base, then we didn't have any money for anything. You see? If we went off the base when we were traveling around, we would just go to, from one USO to another USO. Mm-hmm. And we'd get coffee and donuts. But better than nothing. You see, coffee and donuts. So they sent us back. And he found 38 other guys out there who did not have waivers on their discharge. And some of the older guys now had been, while we were out there in California, these guys were, some of those got discharged. I mean, and they had to be replaced.
Yeah.
And they replaced them with young guys who were just recruits. And so they were chemists, but they were going to put in a couple of years. So they sent 38 other guys out there, and they went on bikini. We never went on the bikini. But we get back, and the commander is just beside himself. So he decided they're going to give all these guys details. So I'm Lucky Pierre, sergeant, because I got an easy name to remember, Day. Yeah, Day! Yes, Sergeant. You get your fucking ass over here. I mean, you know the language that they use. That word is used for everything, you see. 7 o'clock in the morning, next morning, I'd be down there. My job was to paint the commander's office. I should have been discharged too. But, I mean, I had signed a waiver of my discharge. I'm just sitting around waiting to be discharged. I'm not going to paint the damn commander's office. I was a good soldier. The war is over. That's the way guys felt in those days. I'm out of here. Okay? And I want to get. I want to go back to school, and I have to find a graduate school that'll take me. I want to go into a PhD program. In those days, you had to get into a PhD program, otherwise you're going to wash test tubes for the rest of your life. So, and it was a GI Bill, so it was a good deal. I want. As did everybody else. I get down there at 7 o'clock in the morning. He gives me a paintbrush. He gives me a bucket of paint. And he says, yeah, I want you to go paint the commander's office. Well, the commander wasn't there, obviously, because he didn't come in until 8 o'clock in the morning. And so I get in there, and this commander had a big map, and he had all kinds of pins in this map. So I pull that damn thing off the wall, you see, and I roll it up. I take his desk, I push it out into the middle, and I put his chair up on top of the desk, his waste paper on top, and all the furniture in the middle over there. And then I sit down, and then I open up the canopy, and I paint a great big excellent block, and I sit down. I wasn't doing it. And so, pretty soon I hear this truck outside, and I go out, and I wait till it pulls up in front, and I know what that truck is for, and that's the sitcom. So I go out and I said, hey, I said, Sergeant, do you have any aspirin? He said, what the? Using the F word. I said, Sergeant, I have a split headache. I said, do you have any aspirin? I can't paint the captain's office unless I got to get rid of this headache. He said, get your ass on that truck and get you back here and get that office painted. Okay, Sarge. So I get in the back of the truck. I get out to the hospital, the Army hospital, and there's an Army major. What's wrong with you, Sergeant? I said, gee, maybe I said, I'm not sure. I said, this never happened to me before, but they got me on a pain detail. And I said, I have this splitting headache, and I see death. He says, simple, you're allergic to pain. He says, I'll have to give you a passage from pain details. He says, and you probably ought to take it easy for two or three days. And he writes this out and gives it to me. And I get back on the truck, and they take me back to where we were quartered. In the meantime, it's 8 o'clock, and this commander, who was, I guess he was a Navy
major cave. And he sees what's happened to his office, and he just goes through the roof. Well, he doesn't holler at me, I'm not there, but he goes after that first sergeant. He's all over that first sergeant. So when I come back, well, this truck, I never tell anybody this story. When I came back on that truck, I knew what was going to happen. I come in, and let me tell you, he starts swearing using that four-letter word from the time that I got off that truck till I get into his arms, and he never stops. And up and down and back and forth. I just stand there looking straight in the eye. Never move, just looking straight in the eye. And when he's finished, I give him this look. You see? And I knew that he couldn't touch me. Then he couldn't touch me. So I got back to my barracks, back to the barracks. Other guys are out there digging ditches and they're cutting grass and they're trimming hedge and they're doing all kinds of things, picking up police in the area, anything. Other guys are painting, but they weren't painting the captain's office. They got somebody else over to paint the captain's office. But I knew I was in trouble. So I called up the Army officer who was in charge of our plant, where we were. I knew. And I told him what had happened. He laughed. He thought that was the funniest thing that ever happened. He said, because he didn't like this young major. I'd heard him make remarks about this young major in the past. He didn't like him at all. He wasn't a very likable guy. He took his job much too seriously for what he was doing. All he was doing was just providing housing for a bunch of guys. They didn't do anything to soldiers or anything like that. And so he laughed. I said, Colonel, I said, you may laugh. I said, but if you don't get me out of this, you don't get me some kind of an assignment and take care of me, I said, I'm going to be digging a hole from here to China. He says, don't worry about it, Sergeant, I'll take care of it. So he evidently called this major and had me assigned to his office. Okay? And under his protection, so I then nobody was going to touch me then. He assigned me to headquarters. It wasn't his office, it was at headquarters. Because they didn't need me out at the plant anymore. They assigned me to a Major Thompson, Alberto Thompson, Major Thompson. He was in charge of declassifying material. And so they had a group there that was declassifying material because the civilian agency would not take over January 1, 1947. And everything was classified, whether it was a number of toilet paper rolls, everything was classified. Mm-hmm. Anything unclassified had anything to do with stuff. You had to review all the stuff. I was a technical guy, so I could review technical stuff. You know, it was one-eyed, it was a blind, one-eyed man among the blind. I mean, compared to the rest of them, I knew something.
What was Thompson's background? Did he have a degree?
Chemist.
Was it?
PhD chemist. Alberto Thompson. And he reported there was a lieutenant colonel. I can't remember what his name was. Well, anyway, he told me what he wanted me to do, which was start reviewing stuff. And at that stage of the game, my conscience really bothered me because I hadn't done anything now for almost 3 months. And what I did was not what I would normally do. I mean, if I get an assignment, I just do my assignment. I don't like it. And the guy, I mean, you just, whatever it is, you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may disagree with my boss. I'll tell my boss if I disagree with him. I'll explain why I think it ought to be done differently. This is what he wants to do. I'm going to do it. Okay? No matter how stupid it is, I'd go ahead and do it. So, I worked hard. And I was declassified. I was getting stuff out, reviewing stuff faster than anybody else was. I'm surprised. I was just prize student over here. I was only, you know, Mr. Man. He was just delighted. So one day I got my honors to go to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to be discharged. So I went in to see him. He said, you can't leave. He says, we need you. I said, look, Major, I said, I want to go to graduate school. I said, and if I don't get out and start getting around and being interviewed, I won't get into graduate school. And I said, and it's going to cost me a year. I said, and I don't want to spend another year down in Oak Ridge. And he said, well, look, he says, we need you. He says, I'll bring you back here for the summer. I said, look, you'll only bring me back here for the summer. I said, but I said, I still have to go out. I said, I wouldn't come back here until I found out where I was going to go to school, or at least I'd started my interviews. So he begged and he pleaded. And he finally said, look, he says, what can we get to get you back? I was only a young guy. And so in those days, he says, I want a P3. Well, if you were a young professional with my grade, I mean, you know, my experience, you would have got a P1. Well, I think P3, no way in the world. He says, get back to your work. You know damn well I can't get you a P3. I says, Major, you ask. So I went back to work. Yeah, I worked. I enjoyed what I was doing because I was getting some self-respect back. You're after just goofing off.
Yeah.
I was getting some self-respect. And he came in about 2 hours later and said, okay, you're back here. I get you a temporary. You'll be back here as a P3. I said, okay. I said, but it's only for the summer. Period. He said, okay. I wouldn't have any trouble getting to graduate school. I mean, I knew that. And so I sent out applications. And I started, and I continued to work. And one day he comes to me and he says, what are we going to do with all this stuff? I says, look, Major, I'm a chemist. I don't know what you do with all this stuff.
All the stuff means all the documents.
All this documents.
Yeah.
He says, they were setting up a library. And they had a librarian there, Simpson, and Bernie. He was dean of the school at the University.
Bernie Fry.
Mm-hmm. Bernie Fry was there. Nicest guy in the world. A real warrior, but the nicest guy. Nicest guy in the world. Wouldn't hurt a foot. Nicest guy in the world. He was there. He was a librarian. He was the head librarian. Mm-hmm. Simpson kind of ran things, but he reported to Bernie Fry. The stuff that we were declassifying, everything was compartmented, okay? There were no rules. Some of the stuff was longhand, some of the stuff was typed, some of the stuff was mimeographed, okay? Some had titles, some didn't have titles, some had authors, some didn't have authors. There was no room to write any numbers up on the spine because they weren't that thick. Mm. Because you just wrote, there were reports from you to your superior, whoever you reported to. And he wrote to who he reported to, and that's all. You never back and forth across. You never discuss back and forth. Okay? So they had all this stuff. What were they going to do with all this stuff? And they felt that they had to make it available to the public. Okay?
And this is all documenting the Manhattan Project work.
The stuff that I was reviewing.
Yeah.
So I said, look, Major, I'm a chemist. I says, all I know about is chemical abstracts. I said, every chemist subscribes to chemical abstracts. In those days, it was $25 a year, the chemical abstracts, okay? But you didn't get the index until 2 years later or 18
right.
months later. And all I got was a subject index then. And everything was on a volunteer basis.
And you'd already joined ACS?
Well, I joined ACS in college.
Oh, okay.
1943. Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost 55 years now.
Yeah.
I'm from ACS. And so I said, you know, why don't you send somebody up to talk to E.J. Crane? So they go talk to E.J. Crane. The first thing Crane says to him, is this had peer review? Of course it has been. You know, so he wouldn't touch the stuff. So when they came back, there is nothing. You had to set up an information program. And so we decided that we would set up an abstract journal,
verify was key to setting up, and they said it was abstracts of declassified reports, ADDR, something like that. I remember that when they set that thing up. At least it would announce stuff. But there weren't any indexes. There weren't any indexes. But because Bernie was a librarian, we start putting out library cards on these things that we could call documents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not everything was called a document, and you throw that stuff out of a package, but where they had something that would look reasonably like a document, they would put out abstract, they would put out these cards, and it would be, it was cataloged, they had catalogs, they were cataloging the stuff in catalog cards. Well, I liked what I was doing, and then the next thing I knew, I was in the information business. That's how I get into the information business.
Now, you sent your applications off to grad school?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I decided, well, they convinced me to stay for a year.
Okay.
So I figured, okay, I'll make some money. I'll put the money away because it didn't cost me very much. So there were six of us who lived in a house completely furnished. It cost us $90 a month. Okay. We hired a big black lady who cooked and cleaned the house for us, and she'd come in every day and cook. We all put our tools right with all this biscuits and all that kind of stuff.
Now this is in Knoxville or
Alabama? No, this was in Oak Ridge.
Yeah, because Oak Ridge is the way it went out.
Oh yeah, the government owned it, so yeah. So we had all facility, all utilities, everything was paid for, $90 a month, and had furniture and everything in there.
Yeah.
Including linens and towels and what have you and so forth. You couldn't miss $90 a month. Two-door bedroom. There were three-bedroom houses. We had six guys in the house. It cost us $15 a month apiece. And then $15 a month for the lady that came in and cooked for us and cleaned the house. So you couldn't miss on that thing. So I said, okay, I'll stay for a year. I liked what I was doing. I really, because then it became exciting. Then it became exciting.
Now, Thompson was still there?
Thompson was still there. Thompson got moved up to Washington because headquarters were in Washington. And one of the problems you had in Oak Ridge was that you were in a field office.
Right.
And when you're in a field office, you may be king of king of that area there. But let me tell you, You had very little influence in what was going on in headquarters.
Yes, right.
That's just the way it works. Yeah, now you have to accept it. So he went up to Washington, and he reported to Moore Salisbury. Moore Salisbury had a public information office and a technical information office, and he headed up the technical information office. He died. He was only on that job 2 years, and he had a heart attack, and he died. And Mortaub was his deputy.
I thought Tom was at the Library of Congress.
He was, but then he went to.
Is 47 that you're talking about.
That's right. Alberto hired him, and he became his deputy. I was still down at Oak Ridge,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I was a special. I'd done every job there. I learned. I did. Worked every job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became the assistant to the chief down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, Fry was at Oak Ridge?
Fry was at Oak Ridge. He got transferred up after Mort Taub died. Mort Taub died, too.
Mm-hmm.
He had a heart attack on a sailboat.
Well, that was not until the 50s.
That went until the 50s. Bernie Fry was up there as the head librarian.
Okay. At the AEC headquarters.
AEC headquarters. Mm-hmm. Now, he had it all of the whatever centers we had, and he had that responsibility for our libraries across the board.
Had he been in doing this in the Army or something?
I never knew him in the Army.
Okay.
I can't give any background.
Jack Morris was also at your place?
Yeah, I remember the name, but I never had very much to do with him.
I thought he would have worked directly with you in AEC, but not so, huh?
Well, what was Jack Morris doing?
He was head of some library there. I thought it was the AEC, but maybe it was later.
You mean the headquarters library?
No, in Oak Ridge. He was
Well, the only library we had no grids was out at X-10, at DuPont, at Oak Ridge National Lab.
Maybe
that's where he was.
Oh, at Oak Ridge, you're right. O-R-N-L.
O-R-N-L. Yeah, Oak Ridge National Lab. That's where he was, yeah. He did a good job.
Did he come there in the 40s? I can't remember.
I don't know when he came.
Yeah.
I just don't know. But I remember him. You're absolutely right. He did a good job. He did a very good job.
Excuse me. Let me switch tapes here.